So again, this is the first appearance of our book. There's a picture on the cover is just a abstract painting that I had nothing to do with producing, which is a little bit disappointing for two reasons. One is the person who did it happens to be a well-known Prolog programmer, okay, which I had nothing to do. So those of you guys who know about our Prolog, a guy named Klotzman, William Klotzman, I think his name is. The more interesting thing is actually my co-author's wife is an artist, and if we had known that they were going to do this, we would have probably picked one of hers. And the other thing is that my three-year-old actually is now doing watercolors, and they look astonishingly like this. So in fact, if I had done it all over again, I probably would have wanted to lobby for one of Bonnie's paintings. But that's beside the point. Okay, any questions about paintings or art or anything like that? Okay, so let's just take a look. First of all, any questions about computational geometry? Let's see how far people got on the computational geometry questions. Again, we had four questions last time. How many people got all four? Again, nine, obviously. How many people got three? How many people got two? How many people got one? Did anybody get any of the computational geometry problems? Okay, no. Okay, did anybody try? You tried?
I tried some.
You tried some. Which ones did you try?
Actually, I spent a decent amount of time working mostly mentally on Chainsaw Massacre.
Okay.
Can we go over Chainsaw Massacre only? I don't understand the input, the second type of the input that they, how, I don't quite understand what the form means.
Okay, so let's talk about the Chainsaw Massacre. Okay, problem. I think that's actually a good one. That's actually, again, my plan for today, as I promised you, was that I have a lecture prepared on the grids chapter, which I'm happy not to use, and discuss new, problems, either old problems or even some of the grid problems with you. Okay? So it's up to you guys to figure that out. For the Chainsaw Massacre problem, let's take a look at that. The problem here says that we are given a, what looks like to me, you're given a specification of where trees are located on a field, okay? And it tells you, the first line tells you how many scenarios. For each scenario, okay, the first line tells you the length and width of the area in meters. Okay, and I guess all the trees lie at grid points, right? Okay. We then know that there are two ways to specify trees. One is you can specify to you can specify one XY to denote the coordinates of a single tree located at XY with respect to the upper left corner. The other thing is you can specify where for something of the form K, if you want to design more than one tree simultaneously, you can specify them as lying in a box where the starting point, the upper left-hand corner, I guess, of the box is X and Y. Okay? And actually, is it a box or is it a skipping, it looks like? Let's stop and think about it, okay? It looks like what this is telling us is that the number of trees is specified as being on a line where that line is, so, okay, so it's either allowing to specify a single tree or a line of trees where that line is delta X, given by delta X delta Y, and presumably runs till the, it gives you the number of trees and, so I think I understand what that input is. Any questions about, does that answer, what is your question?
I don't understand how you get the number of the points for each tree.
So let's take a look at the final, let's look at the last example to see if we understood that. Okay, so the sample input. Sample input says that we have a 10 by 10 field. We've got a 10 by 10 field. It's telling us that what are the coordinates of the 10 by 10 field? Just so we understand it. It looks like that it goes from 0 from 0, 0. So the first three is at 0, 0. Oh, not the first 0, the origin is at 0, 0. And it says that this is at the where is this, let's just take a look at that. Where does it say the origin is? Okay. With respect to the upper left corner, right? So this is really the first point of the tree, right? And it says that we have length 10. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We have to clarify that if we say that it goes from the length of the width. The length is presumably, the question is, do we include a tree at the founder? The first question I'm wondering about is to make sure we have this right. Is it possible to have a tree at the 10th position with the 10 by 10 grid?
Shouldn't matter because you have it's like you have trees along all boundaries anyway.
Right. So basically what you're saying is that without loss of generality, we sort of have, because we don't want, because everything has to end at a grid point. We might as well assume that the trees are at 10 at every position. So in fact this might be a sentinel way to handle that special case, right? It's actually to fill in. If you were storing, representing the trees as grids, it might be actually fill in the boundary and then not worry about it. Then we have a choice. We can specify trees, it looks like, as either a single point. Let's say 2, 3. And you specify by x, y. I guess 2, 3 is probably like this. Right? Is that what 3, 2, 3 would be?
Okay.
I think so. We have to make sure about that. But then in general, what it says is that you've got a... Otherwise, it says it's going to have k trees. In this case, it's going to be 2 at so what is this thing saying here? The example here would be 2 trees starting at point 1, 1, where the skip is a to the x, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, this is 1. So 8 would be 9, right? We add 8 to it. 9, 8, 0. This would be the second grid. Right? Am I right about that? Am I?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, what is the second one? It says there's also one that starts at 1. 9, and the delta here is also 8x to 9x. So this is now what, 9 at 1? 9. 9, 9. 9, oh. 9, 1. I hate these indices. 1, 1. What is the largest rectangle there is? By this definition, I will. What is the largest rectangle?
The 4 points
between the 4 points connected.
Well, you extend it out to either side.
I'm going to extend it out to either side, right? So it tells us that the width is. This is an 8 distance from here, right? And this is 10 distance from there. So that's why they say the answer was 8. Any questions about that? Okay? The other example here was actually an empty rectangle size 2, 3, and it said that it was a size 6. But this is the more interesting example. Any questions? Okay?
You have three trees.
Yeah.
You take the deltas between each one, right? You keep adding.
Right, so what I would say is if I was given three trees, starting from 1, 2, and going to say, at a deltas of 2, 1. I would interpret that as being at 1, 2, the second tree would be at 3, 3,
The next three would be at 5:44. Okay, is that reasonable? Because I think that's right. Okay, so this is just a way of specifying trees. Okay, a lot of trees with a small amount of input potentially. But how do we now find the largest empty rectangle? Okay, any ideas as to how we might do this? So now we've got a grid of points. Let's say that we've actually got the points. Let's not worry about the where they came from. Let's just say that we've got, as input, you have got a bunch of points in the grid. Where, how do we find the largest area of rectangle? Let's think about this. It says, how many trees are there? There's 1,000 trees. Okay? Any ideas how you might do that?
You sort of then by say, and then you find the largest difference.
Sort them by x coordinate.
Yeah.
And find the largest difference between x coordinates.
Right.
That are realizable. You could do that, but does that provide you any information?
Wouldn't it give you the largest area of the tree?
I would claim the answer is no. Why? Suppose, let's say that we have one row here with trees in every column. Okay, you can still build a huge matrix of trees, even though there's a delta x of only one by your notion. So that I don't think leads us anywhere. Okay, how might we find the largest area of empty rectangles? Okay, I would want to think about this in terms of constraints of trees. Okay, so now I would be wanting to, one way we talked about doing it was we could try every set of four trees. Okay, and if we have four trees, is the longest rectangle defined between them well defined? Well, I mean, if there's trees that are, one is going to be the top, bottom, left, and right constraint. The answer is yes, right? You know, some maybe have some tricky cases, like, you know, you might want to go down to the end of the screen if there's no bottom tree or something like that. So one way would be simply to go through and try all subsets of four trees.
But in order to do that, you'd also determine what, make sure that there's no trees inside that subset.
So you also have to test if a rectangle is empty, right? That's also true. Any other way we might be able to do this? Okay? Let's think about it. That gives you something that's going to be 1,000 on the order of 1,000 to the fourth, which is probably large. Okay? Any other ideas how we might find such an empty rectangle?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, no, I'm saying this is kind of so easy visually, but programming it.
Well, not so easy visually either. I mean, you know, I would argue that in a complicated case,
yeah,
it would not be easy visually. Okay? You know, so for example, you can easily imagine something like this, where,
oh, yeah, sorry.
Which one of those is bigger or not, pardon me to say. Okay? Any other ideas how we might do this one? Suppose I told you that a tree here was going to be a top tree. Let's say that I have a tree. Let's say I want to know what's the largest rectangle that contains that tree as a box. So, Gil, could you do that? How would you do that?
As far as you can go, see if there is.
So as far as I can go until I see a tree, right?
Correct.
and I'm presuming the same thing to the right, right? What does that tell me now?
Only as you're going to see if there's any trees that's either below or above it.
Well, I don't know. What are we doing now?
I'm not sure what you're doing here. You're going as far as...
Let's say I want to figure out. Let's say I want to solve the problem. Let's say I solve a special case for it. We agree that the optimal solution has a starting tree.
Right.
A topmost tree. Can you solve the problem of what is the largest rectangle where this is its topmost tree? How would we do that? Suppose we could solve that. We do that for every tree. You solve your problem, right? So how do we do that? Somehow I agree with you. It's interesting to go right below it and see how where the leftmost tree is or the rightmost tree is. Does that tell us what we need?
Not by itself.
Not by itself. So what else do you have to do? Why is that by itself?
Well, you have all kinds of weird special cases where you might say... I can go all the way out to here and all the way out to here, and that looks good, and I have a tree here, and this is as low as I can go, so there I go. There's the biggest rectangle I can get. Except for, if I don't go all the way to this tree, maybe I can do a rectangle like this. So, just finding this point isn't necessarily going to solve things for me.
So what is it that you really want to know, it seems to me? Now my question is, if you could figure out, see, that's what you're concerned with, is if you move in, what is really relevant is this stove case type structure you might be getting.
I don't know what a stove case is,
but some staircase like structure of possible places you can go in and out. Okay? What is the property and what are the points defining the stove case? The trees, but what? Which one? There are lots of other trees. What are the relevant trees defining this tree here? What? I believe these are the trees.
Yeah, those are the trees on the inner corner, basically.
Right?
Yeah.
And so what are the properties of those trees in the inner corners? How would you identify what those trees are?
So you go, say you want to define your first step. You go out as far as you can to the left.
Yeah.
Until you hit a tree.
Yeah.
And now you start moving down. The first tree you hit is going to be a step in on that side.
So I start out from here. I find where is the first tree. Left and right of me.
Right.
What is my next relevant thing?
Go down another step and see what's the furthest to the left and the right.
Right.
Keep doing that until you hit a tree.
And
you'll get that structure, so to speak.
Well, what if the tree is out here?
You're only checking the area of width that you're currently, that you've already delineated from the side to side tree.
So you're not interested in any tree that is out there.
Right, because it can't be part of the rectangle we want anyway, regardless. As long as that, we want that point to be in it.
Okay, so let's say that we understand that now. Okay? What is this? How much time would it take to build this structure? If you have N trees, and let's say you have T trees and N rows. What's the time complexity to do that? Depends on how you organize your trees. But any ideas how you might maybe should do that?
Maybe we should just store the trees as a point.
Yeah.
Sort them so that they lined up according to that grid. And then this way you just test all the trees that are to the left and to the right.
Okay. So you could store them as a matrix, but the trouble is to find the neighboring trees, you have to walk them all out of like
right.
dead wood, basically. Okay? Any questions? So how might you store, what might be a way to store these trees? Is it the way that maybe this kind of query might be pretty quick?
I want to say a graph, but I don't know if that might be overkill.
What's...
To make this particular theory quick, or as quick as you can do it, what might seem like a reasonable way to do it? Okay. Any idea, any proposals for how you data structure for your trees? I can give two possible data structures for trees, one of which would be obvious. Obvious one. Well, how would you represent these trees? How might you represent the trees?
A two-dimensional array.
You might use a two-dimensional array, an n by n array. And a pixel here says that there's a tree, it's either true or false. But that's the trouble is now we've got a sparse data structure. So might we use less of like the equivalency of an adjacency list, almost. What if we said, you listed these by the columns, by the rows. And for each row, you tell me which columns there are trees in it.
I'm just thinking, you know, 17, 92.
Such and such. How many times will each tree be represented here?
Just once.
Just once. Okay, there's no dead wood, right? Now with this, if you add this kind of a thing,
makes it really easy to see where your gaps are.
Yeah, it does.
Your gaps are really between here and here, right? So how much time would it take to build this structure from a particular tree?
A number
of... So well, how would we start? How would we do this? How would we do this?
I'm not sure it's a good idea. Test this tree. Test this tree, but you won't really have to go all the way because it would.
So, how would you show?
It won't take a long time. Well, you can't prove it.
Alright, so say if we pick one of the trees in the first row, say the five. Then all we have to do is scan through every row.
Yeah.
We scan through it until we find
the leftmost tree to the rightmost tree to the left of it.
Exactly.
Tree zero.
And then the next entry will be the space between
expanding bracket, right?
Yeah.
And now you're gonna go through and do the same kind of module from here. Looking, you want to know what is the tree that's within here. So now what do you want? You want to know what tree span this was, subject to also the previous nesting level, right? So how much time should it take to build this thing?
Well, you got to go through potentially n rows, and you have to scan through some number of trees. But actually, you're only going to have to scan through a maximum of your... if you keep track of rows with that, trees with M, the maximum number of trees you can go through, you can go only go through each tree once.
You go through each tree once, this is going to be the order of the number of trees,
right,
plus the number of rows. So if you had no trees, to verify that, you've got to scan through something like this.
Right.
So that gives us this, okay, which seems quite an efficient thing. If you add this, what's the largest rectangle?
Just go out from each of the steps, create the largest rectangle you can. You know all four boundaries.
Well, we claim is that the largest, that the set of rectangles defined are going to be defined by every step. So how much time is that going to take as you go through the staircase? Number of trees appearing on this end, right?
Right.
Right. So I want to argue that if you go through this, then you should be able to walk through this thing. Every time you see where the next tree appears,
right. That
defines a rectangle, and now you squashed it a little bit. Now whenever the next tree appears, okay? So my claim is you could solve this problem in order n time, couldn't you? Well, theoretically, it'd be done.
You
write the program, it's done. Okay? Does everybody agree with that?
Of course, that assumes we know where the top tree is. And we have to go
check through each tree.
Top tree.
But how many top trees are there?
Number of trees.
Number of trees, M.
So, M. So you're telling me your algorithm now runs in something like. Something like n times m, right? Is that doable?
Yeah, 1,000 to 1,000, it should be doable.
So this might be a way to do it. They have to be very carefully handled with special cases at the very top of the tree and the bottom of the tree. But this might be one way to do it. Okay? Everybody sort of see what that is? Or any questions about that? Does this seem doable? Might be a little bit intricate, but of course, what's nice about this is you're not doing any real geometry. You know, some of those stuff that we talked about here, you know, trigonometry, and that sounds like real geometry. Here we're just doing stuff on a grid, on points on a grid, dealing with boxes. Okay? But I think that if we do it that way, I think that's actually quite manageable. Okay? And it's basically time proportional to the number of trees squared. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay, I think that will work. Okay? Every people see it, like it. You want to estimate how many lines of code this will be?
Oh, lots.
Say a lot. I would say 100 is my gut feeling without knowing very much. Okay? Any questions? Or you want to discuss it more? Okay? So that one's doable. Are there any of the other ones you talked about from last night that were on the geometry problems that we want to talk about again? That people thought about, didn't think about? Any other problems people like? Anybody try any of the other problems and get stuck? Okay.
I didn't try, but can we talk about the hotter, colder? Because I always thought that one was doable.
Hotter, colder. Hotter, colder, okay, so what is the hotter, colder problem? The hotter, colder problem said that we were starting at a grid of, you know, I guess we had a room that was defined, I guess it was a 10 by 10 room, or at least in the example. But was it always 10 by 10, or it tells us? Yeah, the room is a 10 by 10 room.
Yeah.
I'm assuming these are the indices. Correct me if I'm wrong. And we're starting out here. And we're now given another point in the room. And told whether we are closer to, we want to try to find a hidden object. Okay? Somewhere in Iraq or Saddam Hussein. Okay, you want to find Saddam Hussein, and you have Tariq Aziz, you know, as in captivity. Okay, but he's loyal. He's not going to tell you where he is, but he will play hotter, colder with you. Okay, so what is the story here? You start out looking for him over here, and then you say, well, what about here, Tariq? And he'll say, colder. Okay, so what does that mean? That means that basically we divide the space, the entire world into regions that are the points that are closer to the original or closer to the next point. By saying colder, Mr. Aziz was saying that in fact Saddam was alive still next year. Okay? And then maybe we'll go and say, okay, now, and so basically what we're going to do is every time we get another point, now, sorry, you say, what about this corner, Tariq? And he's going to say, Potter. Okay? What does that mean? That we now know that it, that the saint is closer to this than to that. Where, you know, where is he?
Bottom half.
Horizontally,
I believe, is the right solution.
And what basically what we're doing is after we play this game for as long as the forces will play it, we're going to have a region of possibilities where Hussein is. And the question is, what is the area of that region? Right? So there are a couple of different problems here. One is, what are the sub-problems, let's say, that we need to know how to solve this in order to do this?
First sub-problem is, how do we compute where this halfway line is?
How do you compute the halfway line? Okay, and this is something we talked about that I think we know how to do.
Right.
If we were here before, and we're now here, what is the line that divides the, you know, the world into hotter and colder regions?
That's perpendicular.
Okay. I was going to say it's sort of the Arctic Circle what divides the hotter from colder regions, or something like that. But in fact, what it is, we said with the perpendicular bisector. Why was it the perpendicular bisector? Well, we know that if we draw the line between two points, okay, line segment between them, the midpoint on that line segment is equidistant. So that's clearly a relevant point. Now, what are the other equidistant points? Well, the other equidistant points have the property that you've got DD, okay? And I think that from this, if we derive it, we will see that this will lie on the perpendicular that will define the perpendicular bisector. Okay? So that tells us now how do we get the region. Okay. That tells me how do we figure out where the cut line is? What other sub problems do we need to solve this?
We need to somehow keep track of the active region.
Okay. The active region. So what's happening to the active region each time?
Should get smaller.
Potentially getting smaller.
Concave or staying the same.
It's either potentially it's basically what you're doing is you're starting out with what looks like a rectangle polygon. And then what are you doing?
Snipping off sections.
You're giving a line and finding the intersection between that line and your polygon, right? And then using that to find the new polygon. So you're intersecting polygons, basically, with a half plane, so it would be the technical term for that. Can anyone give me an algorithm for doing that? Suppose I give you a polygon, and I give you a line. How do we find the area that the polygon that is cut off by that line? Okay? Any ideas how you might do that?
Well, we can use the find the two line segments that the line intersects.
Right, so the first question is, does the polygon intersect the line segment? Right? So here we've got a polygon, which is specified by what? An ordered list of points? Right? That's basically the easiest way to represent our polygon. That's what we talked about doing. I give you a line. What you're saying is there are two segments. If it intersects the polygon, in an interesting way, it intersects it in two segments. Right? So how can we find those two segments? Do you know how to do that?
We have a line intersection test.
Yeah, you have a line intersection test. The line segment intersection test that you can read in this new chapter. So the answer is yes. You know how to give it if you say, does this line segment intersect this line? And you might even want to make it a line segment test by figuring out where that line hits the box, right? Which I think is pretty easy.
Yeah.
Okay? So I think you're right. You can figure out where exactly are these intersections happening. Now, how do we adjust the polygon for that?
Well, anything that's any line segment that's not intersected that's on the hotter side.
So in fact, really, we don't just have a line. We have a line with a hotter, with a either hotter or colder side, an interesting side to it, right? That will tell us which half of the polygon that are we interested in.
Then you just grab all of the line segments that are on the hotter side that weren't intersected, just remain the same.
Yeah.
The two that were intersected get their new points from the
intersection points go in,
and then you add the last.
And all the other points go away, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So if we're using an array of points representation, we have to move some stuff around because we might have knocked off a lot of vertices or not. So that may be a linked list better or not, but I don't know. It's up to you guys to program for us. You know, but one way or the interesting thing is it looks like all that's happening is because we're intersecting it with a line all the time. All that we're eventually doing is hacking off a region.
We're changing the first and last, so to speak.
Okay. So the interesting thing is we have to know about which is the left side and which is the right side, right? Which is the hotter side, which is the colder side. What tools do we have to help make those decisions? Counterclockwise test, right? Once you know what the side is, you want to keep the points that lie on, you know, the left side. You can just tell which points lie on the left side, which points lie on the right side. Okay? And so that, I think, might be a helpful tool for doing this. What special cases, though, are there? Are there any other special cases?
It seems like you'd have to handle where the line intersects a vertex.
Where the line intersects a vertex. Only a vertex. The line intersects only a vertex. What's the interesting? What happens to the intersecting region?
Stays
the same or is completely eliminated.
Stays the same or is completely eliminated. Right? I guess it actually won't be completely eliminated. This suggests Saddam Hussein is there, right? Because they're always guaranteeing us that he's still in Iraq.
No.
No, they don't?
Well, they're saying that the area can go down to zero.
Well, in case you found them, okay? Or you've got how could the area go down to zero?
That's if you chopped off everything.
If you go up from the lower left, if you go from 0, 0 to 10, 10, it says hotter. And then you go from 10, 10 back down to 0, 0, and it gets hotter. Then they say the area is now zero because you only have a line.
Right, so what has area zero? A point has area zero.
A line
is area zero. Okay, so we agree we're going to find this guy. So I guess we don't really have to worry about the case where the whole region, where we suddenly ask this question. We might have a line, by the way, that doesn't intersect the polygon at all. What do we do if the line does not intersect the polygon at all?
We didn't shorten the field. It stays the same, doesn't it?
It stays, assuming that we're not going to get told that Saddam has escaped, okay, then in which case it would be, we say hotter, and this is the right side with it. Okay?
Right.
Then I would argue that it should stay the same if we miss the region. If we hit the corner or a line, these are the degenerate cases. Our area might go down to area zero, or might be unchanged. Yeah.
I think there's a difference in this. I guess not in the gradation problem, but in the specifics, like of the area of a point and a line, and the area of no polygon. Because the example, if I remember correctly, it does not say that the state would be on the line. The hotter, colder actually specifies something that can't happen.
Well, let's look, figure this one out. Actually, for what it's worth, actually, I remember Miguel and I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what the sample input meant. Okay, so let's maybe it's worth trying to do this one, just to get some intuition.
Okay, Miguel eventually figured it out.
But let's try this just to see what the story is. So we might have to worry about the case of he has escaped and then call that zero. Okay, that might be the logical thing to do. Okay? So I think we do have to probably worry about that case. I'd probably, for the program defensively, I would want to worry about that. So what was this particular example here? We started out at 0, 0, 10, 10. With this total 10, 10 here, we go look at the dividing line between it, I believe, and I want your help here. Colder means that it's now this lower triangle. Everybody agree? Now we get told to deal with 10, 0. And we are told hotter. What does that mean, I believe? Everyone agree that that's right now when they just lost from 10, 10, 10, 10, 0? Oh. Excuse me. So that's the wrong one. You're really telling me is that this is the region, right?
You said it was hotter now or colder?
You said this is the hotter, right?
So it's the lower region. Bottom right there.
Oh, okay, you're right. So let's just leave this here to avoid this. This is 5. This presumably is also 5, right?
Yes.
And what is the next thing we know? Now we're here. And the next step is 0, 0. Now we are told what? Colder. Should be in the triangle. Are we right? What's the area of this triangle? Now we figure out what the area of this triangle is. What? You want to say 5 times 5 times 1/2. That's a 12.5. Is that what they said? Yes. Okay, so that's good. Okay, so far we're right. And now it says 10, 10. Where was I? I was here, and now I am here. And it now asks hotter. So what is the relevant region? Just that line.
Well, you have to be on the other side of
the line. Well, line is...
A line is very thin. A line is infinitesimally thin.
Didn't it say they had a shape? They had, like, if you...
Oh, they have a
side is the other one?
Oh, they do have a same.
So, wait. So, save.
Would you
walk it? So, you're saying that you're
finding and this polygon, but this polygon and this polygon.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So, what you want to say is that either Saddam has escaped or the region is zero. Okay, and that does look a little bit ambiguous here. Okay.
If it doesn't exist, then the answer would be zero.
So I would probably, if I were playing this thing, I would say that if it doesn't exist, the answer is zero. Okay? Which makes sense. I mean, that's a logical thing. It isn't really any harder than what you're doing so far. Okay? So what's the remaining job that you need to do? We now know what this region is. Is there any other part that you have to do?
Find the area.
Find the area. How do you find the area of a polygon? So there are a couple different ways to do it. One way to do it is to decompose it into triangles. Now, is the region we get convex or not?
Convex.
Why do we know that the region has to be convex?
Because any line cutting through it is cutting through the whole thing.
It's cutting through the whole thing. We can't create notches here, right? There were no notches before. We keep chopping it off. There's no more notches. So, and you probably put it in the room, the angle is never going to get small. The internal angle is never going to get so large, larger than 180 degrees. So, one way to do this would be to triangulate it. And you know how to compute the area of a triangle. How can we triangulate a convex polygon?
Pick an arbitrary point, draw lines to all non-adjacent points.
Okay? So for a convex polygon, we could say, well, the area of this is the area of this plus the area of that plus the area of that. Okay? Does everybody sort of see that should work? We showed you, you have a routine to compute the area of a triangle. So this should do the job, right? What if, on the other hand, you wanted to compute the area of a region with notches? How would you compute the area of that? Looks like it's good we don't have to do this now. How would you do it?
Break off pieces that form notches until you have a collection of convex polygons.
So one possibility is to triangulate the polygon. And do the same trick, right? Could I triangulate this thing? Well, I can stick this thing in here, that thing in there, maybe this thing, this thing, this thing, this thing. And compute the area of each triangle, right? And in fact, in the book, I show you how to compute the such a triangulation. Okay? So one way you could do it is by finding a triangulation and then computing the area of it. Okay? Or you could read a little further in the book and see that there is a very slick way to do it, which I describe on the, which I'll just show you just so you don't waste a lot of time on area computation. Remember, we talked about, what do we do here? Yeah, we talked about the area, how to compute the area of the triangle using these, basically the determinant methods. There is this very slick formula I give in the book, which again, which shows you how to compute the area of any polygon by using the signed area routine. Okay, and it works down to this simple formula. So if we give you the x and y coordinates of all the points, and the polygons are listed in, I guess it's counterclockwise order or whatever, you have to be careful with the specs. I claim this routine will compute the area of it. Okay, so there is in fact a slick way to do that. So this should not be your problem. The area, finding the intersections is probably the hardest thing here. Okay? But all taken together, this problem I now think is doable. Okay, does everybody agree with that? The geometry is not that fancy. Okay? And this one, I think, is a doable problem now. Okay? And undoubtedly, the armed forces would appreciate your help. Any questions? Okay, any questions about... Okay, so I think that that actually does now give us reasonable ways to do these two problems. Both of which are now, you know, in the realm of things that I think normal people can program. Okay, it might be a, you know, it might be... A fair, you know, this might be a few hours' work, but I think that that's, those are now, I claim, doable. Okay, or apparently doable. Okay, until we learn otherwise. Any questions? Okay, any other problems people wanted to talk about from this week or past weeks or anything like that?
The Shoemaker problem?
Shoemaker problem. Okay, this goes way back. Tell you what. How much time remains in class? Let's just think about this for a second.
12:17,
20 minutes. Tell you what. Before we hit the Shoemaker problem, let's try the course review problem. Okay? Does that sound like a fair bet for today? Okay? So let's, we'll talk about Shoemaker next time. Okay? And any other problems people want to talk about next time. So what I would like to do is pass out the course reviews. So you guys have probably filled out these things before. Now the only catch is, I do have the specs that I need here. So here is the course reviews.
I'll let everybody in the world listen to this if they want to listen to this. But it sounds like a good course for you.
But so the course is 392, CSE 392. My name is Skina, S-K-I-T-N-A. And the instructor number is 25145. Okay, and what I was going to do now is pass out these forms and,
files.
And pencils. I've also got pencils.
Let's see what's happening here. Pencils. Here's the sort of pencil on pencils.
The other one's here. So what I want to know is, again, there's still in the blanks, there's 12 forces. I'm interested in knowing, definitely getting your feedback about this course. This is the first time I've taught it with the book, and, some things I think went well, some things did not go well. But you guys may have any feedback you can give me about making this course a better thing. I like this course and want this to be a good course. But
I noticed it's not on the schedule.
Well, it's not going to be over every semester. The vision is this will be offered every spring. Is probably the vision. Okay, partially so it can people who take it can then go on and compete in our program at the programming contest in November. Okay, so any of you who are veterans of this, are interested, I'll be very happy to see you. What I need from you now is I need somebody to collect these forms and bring them to the departmental secretary. There's somebody who will collect them. Okay, very good. So I'm going to leave you with here's the envelope, here are the extra forms. I want my pencils back. Again, I won't look at these till after your final grades are given. Is there anybody who has not yet signed up and gotten an appointment to be graded, okay? So a grading appointment during the final. Okay, so write this. So take one of these remaining slots, 10:15 and 10:30. Yeah, it's two of you. So you fill this out and we'll look at your comments. But be honest, like I usually tell people, it's not good to write that the prof sucks. It's good to write the prof sucks because. Yeah. Give explanation. Okay, so we know for future reference. Okay, thank you. Let's do this thing.